Well, happy Monday. Good to have you here. I got to tell you, it felt like everybody was excited about the 250th. I don't know about you guys, but I mean, the fireworks in my area were off the charts. Off the charts. People were lighting them off left and right.
You know, my neighborhood is under attack.
It felt a little, it felt more this year. It felt more.
Yeah, I feel like they extended the budget to celebrate accordingly.
Yes, yes. And you know who did not cut back on anything? That was the United States of America. Did you see that fireworks display in Washington?
That was unbelievable. I would hate to be the people to have to clean up after that one, because I know what my neighborhood looked like, let alone the National Mall.
That was unbelievable, that fireworks
display. It
really
was.
And everything was put off later because of the severe weather that was in D.C. that rolled through. It pushed the president's speech back, too.
Yeah, he didn't start to, what, after 11?
After 11 o'clock.
Yeah.
Yeah, and one of the things he said is that we're just starting out.
At 250 years old, we may be the oldest constitutional republic on earth, but our country is just getting started because the best is yet to come.
I spent most of the weekend crying and emotional.
Did you really?
We just finished moving out of our house. The kids were you know, growing up there. It was a whole thing. I'm very emotional about it. But
do you want a hug?
Maybe. Maybe. Hug me.
I'm here for you.
No. But like when the president started bringing out these veterans, these World War II veterans, things that they did to simply save a piece of fabric from touching the ground, or you know the acts of bravery and heroic things that they did to save others, it reminds you that this is not, we don't get to do this for free,
right?
There is a toll that has to be paid.
I think that hearing those stories over and over again are so important, because it's so easy to forget exactly what these men and women sacrifice for us to be able to have hot dogs and fireworks in our backyard.
Right, right. So I thought it was, I mean, look, were there a couple of things the president said that I wish he wouldn't have? Of course. That's Donald Trump.
How long did he speak exactly?
He spoke for...
He's still going.
It was, I mean, I don't know. I actually didn't time it. I was exhausted. It was probably a good 45 minutes.
Well, because I remember leading up to it, he was touting that he was going to speak forever in the heat and because he can, and he was going to show everybody. So I didn't know if the delay shortened that intention.
It may have just slightly, but he had so many people lined up that they were being honored that, you know, he kind of had to keep a lot of that baked in.
Sure.
So I think he probably did trim it down a little bit. And then right after that, the fireworks went off. I thought it was fantastic. I thought they did a really nice job of bringing it in. And of course, it's not over for much of the month. People are going to be celebrating and looking back and all of those things on the 250 years. So I thought it was a really special weekend. I thought it was very cool. And I thought they did a really nice job. Meanwhile, we have a big match tonight.
Yeah, we do.
Major match. It's the round of 16, and the United States at 8 o'clock tonight on Fox will be taking on Belgium. And look, Flo Balogun, who is arguably their best player on this roster, has scored in every game so far this World Cup for Team USA. He got booted with a red card after the virtual referee system took over for stepping on a player on Bosnia-Herzegovina's ankle. He got booted, red card. When you get a red card in a game, can't play the next game, right? That's right. Soccer rules. Well, yesterday, news broke that Flo Balogun is actually going to play in this game. FIFA reviewed the case, and they invoked what they called Article 27 of its disciplinary code, which basically, it's very vague, but it's basically like, we can review anything. Now, it doesn't happen often. There are two instances that I can think of off the top of my head where something, well, at least one for sure, that this came into play. And it happened with Cristiano Ronaldo, arguably the best player in the world. He's right. Not, but number two. Very good player. Lionel Messi's number one. But Cristiano Ronaldo elbowed a player, got suspended for three games, got the red card, and the second and third game of that suspension would have fallen in the World Cup. This was last World Cup. And they decided to overrule that and give him a 1 year, like a probationary period.
Huh.
So that's a star player, though. They get treated a little differently.
Sure.
Right? Just like in any sport. Lionel Messi in this World Cup, very similar play to Flo Balogun, stepped on a player's ankle, not even a yellow card. So FIFA feels like they have the autonomy to do this. It doesn't happen very often. It's almost unprecedented, not quite. But the reports that happened that were coming after that news that Flo Balogun's red card was overturned was that Donald Trump was involved, that Donald Trump actually called the head of FIFA, Gianni Infantino, and urged them to review the case. But interestingly enough, according to multiple reports, there were a team of lawyers that were being assembled from USA Soccer.
Wow.
To challenge this. There were, and that had then reached the White House. White House lawyers were getting involved to help in this case.
My.
And then the president just said, you know, screw it. I'm just going to call Gianni and we're going to talk this out. And then Flo Balogun's red card is overturned. So the Team Belgium is obviously very upset. They are certainly not happy with this case. They said the ruling is astonishing. They question FIFA's integrity of their disciplinary process in this. So it's gotten kind of messy. I hope Flo Balogun scores 6 goals tonight. That's what I hope. The Tigers wrapped up a successful road trip, 6-3 win over the Rangers in Arlington. They have won, 5 of their last 6 games. Riley Green, 2-run homer in the 4th inning, had a 2-run triple in the 5th. And Casey Mize continued to pitch really well.
Start, yeah.
6 2/3 innings for him as well. And now we know who the All-Star representatives for the Tigers will be.
Yeah.
I don't have much of a problem with this.
No.
I thought Riley Green was on the bubble.
He was,
but
yeah.
Riley Green, Dylan Dingler, and Kevin McGonigal make it. 3rd straight All-Star appearance for Riley Green, 1st for Dingler, and 1st for Kevin McGonigal, obviously. What do you think of that?
I think it's great. They're all going to be reserves.
Yep.
Tigers' 40th win of the season yesterday, so they're 10 games under 500, 5 games back in the wild card race. A very important 3-week stretch coming up here as the trade deadline looms. What are they going to do?
I don't know.
You know, but three weeks is a long time because, you know, when they implemented the wild card, I mean, these teams that are, 10 games under 500 is not very good.
No.
But 5 games back, that doesn't sound bad. That sounds doable. And they've done it before.
It shows you how bad this division is.
Well, yeah, it shows you that, too, as well, yeah.
The AL Central is absolutely putrid. State Senator Mallory McMorrow has suspended her campaign for this open U.S. Senate seat, and that now leaves, on the Democratic side of things, Haley Stevens and Abdul El-Sayed for this Democratic primary. Now, McMorrow's still going to be on the ballot. All those ballots have been printed at this point, but she had a decline in poll numbers. She was having some issues fundraising. And when those things happen, again, it's like the Mike Duggan effect. Mike Duggan was like, my support is dwindling. I don't know if Mike Duggan's support was dwindling, but there was much more movement towards the Democrats having a harder time fundraising. And so you fold up shop. And that's exactly what Mallory McMorrow is doing as well. Also, in Dearborn, they say they have arrested a 3rd and final suspect in connection to that shooting that happened on July 3rd at Fairlane Town Center. All those suspects are in custody. Dearborn Police SWAT was there. They were investigating a home in Inkster. The suspect there was taken into custody safely. No incident involved there. But 2 young people were killed there. A 3rd person was injured in that deadly shooting as well. Coming up on the other side, it's a Monday. Mike Lee from Cranes Detroit Business joins us. It's JR Morning. All right. Well, as always, on a Monday, we talk to our good pal Mike Lee at Cranes Detroit Business, which is brought to you by Mercantile Bank. Looking for a new business bank? Mercantile can help drive your business forward. Learn more at mercbank.com. Mike, good morning. Hope you had a nice weekend.
Good morning, Chris. You as well.
So where are we on this state budget?
It's been sent to the governor. We had kind of a while you were sleeping start to the weekend in Lansing. The lawmakers worked through the night and into Friday morning, passing a flurry of legislation, including budget bills totaling $74 billion of your tax dollars, as well as literally dozens of other bills. They passed three times as many bills Thursday night and Friday morning as they had the whole year up until then. As a result of you know, the horse trading, people saved their issue to get what they want out of the budget. By all appearances, it's a relatively conservative budget. General fund spending actually drops a little bit. Economic development takes a hit, but there's actually a big boost to economic development in some ways. The tax incentives known as transformational brownfield incentives, which are key to a number of big projects that have been proposed across the state. The legislature voted to double the cap on those, which has long been wanted by the backers of the redevelopment of the Renaissance Center, Bedrock and General Motors. They wanted in the neighborhood of $200 million under the transformational brownfield act, and they've been waiting and lobbying really for this cap to be lifted ever since that revamp was announced in 2024. So it's really a big step forward for that project. They'll still have to get approved for the credits, and I'm sure there will be other twists and turns, but it's the one thing that's been awaiting. They said the plan is they'd like to start that project after the Final Four next spring, and have it, you know, get it underway once the need for the hotel rooms is passed. So a big step forward for that project.
Meanwhile, Novice might be seeing some big development as well, tied to the Vibe Credit Union.
Yeah, this same tax program that the Rensen wants is being sought by the owner of the Vibe Credit Union in Novi for a $400 million development, basically across the street from the Expo Center there. Planned hundreds of residential units, a hotel, apartments, townhouses, condos, restaurants, some entertainment space. Obviously, that's a pretty well-developed commercial corridor, but this is an old industrial property on about 50 acres that they're looking to add all of this development on. So I think it's a pretty ambitious project for a single developer, but it would be a giant leap forward for that convention center with the hotel and the other amenities.
Well, and then they've got this piece to it as well, these condos that would be put in for intellectually and developmental disabilities. That's a pretty unique project.
It really is. They've done one of these before, it's designed with disabled folks in mind, enabling them to live independently. So it's a little carrot in the whole project.
Yeah, certainly. As colleges all across the country as well try to figure out what the heck is going on with college athletics, Michigan State is rethinking how it runs its business too.
Yeah, MSU sort of officially launched its new organization to run the business of college sports for the university. Even as the two leaders who put together the plan are actually leaving MSU. Spartan Ventures is the name of this new independent nonprofit that'll handle all of the commercial activity that goes along with MSU sports fundraising, sponsorships, media rights, NIL deals with the players. The idea is to move faster and more competitively, they say, than a public university bureaucracy allows. It also, as a side benefit, I think they would say, offers a degree of secrecy and privacy because it's an independent organization with a for-profit subsidiary that can keep the terms of all those commercial deals and honestly, player salaries away from the Open Meetings Act and the Freedom of Information Act that the university is subject to. Athletic Director Jay Batt is leaving for Kentucky. Kevin Guskowitz is off to Clemson, but they're both still hanging around due to various contractual wrinkles. There's been some controversy over Spartan Ventures. It's really been one of the topics of dispute among the MSU Board of Trustees, as they bristled against each other in so many ways because they didn't want to sign NDAs to review this Spartan Ventures plans. Got a big boost from a $100 million gift. It was characterized as investment from Acrisure's Greg Williams. It was part of a more than $400 million pledge. That was off to the races for Spartan Ventures. It's all a result of the House versus NCAA settlement. Let's schools pay athletes directly. Right now they have basically a salary cap of about $21 million. And, I think we're going to keep seeing changes in college sports, and we'll find out if setting up this entity has given MSU a leg up.
Yeah, certainly. Mike Lee, always good stuff. Thank you for your time again this morning. All those stories and a whole heck of a lot more over at Crane's and Troy Business. Appreciate you, my friend. We'll talk again next week.
Thank you.
Yeah, you got it. But he's exactly right. I mean, how this is going to change college athletics is a huge question. Now, are more schools going to be able to do it? I mean, it's essentially like a political action committee. This is a separate entity, but it is going to directly benefit the university. It is a new way of thinking about things, and that's one of the things that I think Spartans were most excited about with this idea, is that it keeps them competitive in an era when, yes, athletic departments can directly pay players now, but how they spend those funds is completely up to them. So if you'd like to spend $21 million on your football program, can totally do it, but it puts risk in other areas of the department, in other sports, like for example, the basketball team or the hockey team. So if you're not divvying it up, and even into gymnastics and volleyball, and if you want to continue to remain competitive in these sports, it's important to continue to fund those sports as well. Well, this gives them another avenue with a whole other pot of money to work off them. So absolutely fascinating. And then on the budget side of things as well for the state, that's great news. I love a smaller budget, smaller government. At the same time, you got to continue to push that economic development, and that's exactly what the state's done. The new parasite that's causing havoc, we'll talk about that on the other side. It's Jer Morning. So this gastrointestinal parasitic infection is causing a number of people here in the state of Michigan to be sick. As of just yesterday, more than 225 cases have been identified in 21 Michigan counties, plus the city of Detroit, since June 22nd. And it's affecting people of all ages, 8 to 84 year old. But we don't know exactly where the outbreak is coming from. The U.S. CDC says that they are investigating. They're looking into it. That's at the federal level. Here in Michigan, they're doing the same thing. Dr. Natasha Bagdasarian is the chief medical executive here in the state of Michigan and joins me this morning to talk about, all right, doctor, ready? I'm going to give this a go. Psychosporiasis. Huh?
Yes.
All perfect. Right. Perfect. What is this? Where is this coming from?
Well, this is a parasite that infects the intestines and can cause terrible diarrhea. And this is not something that's spread directly from person to person. You're not catching it from other people. It has been implicated in outbreaks in the past, and those outbreaks have typically been coming from produce that is washed in contaminated water. And so our hypothesis right now is that this is probably an outbreak that is related to something that people are consuming. And again, those outbreaks in the past have been linked to things like raspberries, cilantro, and salad greens. So those are sort of some of the top things that we're thinking about as we investigate this large outbreak.
So diarrhea, abdominal cramps, nausea, low-grade fever in some cases. I think that would make a lot of sense, right? We hear that if you travel to other countries. If you go to Mexico, for example, they tell you not to drink the water there because of something like this happening. Just in terms of the how many people have gotten this in 21 different counties, I mean, it's all over the place.
It is, but we have to really remember that our food isn't hyper-local anymore. When we're talking about things like produce, if in fact this is coming from contaminated produce, you know, this may be at a restaurant that is supplying multiple locations, or this could be at a fast food chain. It could be in a grocery store that is, again, sending their food on to a few different locations. And so when we see outbreaks like this, we've got a whole team of disease investigators who are looking into what people have had to eat and drink, and they're cross-checking all of those things. And we are honing in on some potential suspects.
How difficult is it to go down this rabbit hole and track down where the potential source is coming from?
Well, you know, here's the thing. People sort of wonder what it is that public health does. Why do we need to have a public health system? And it's exactly for reasons like this. We've got a whole system that's been built up over decades of our local health departments, our lab testing, a whole database of information that comes in. And so we've got this system built, and the work is difficult. We're doing things like interviewing those who have been impacted, and then we're compiling that into spreadsheets and then cross-referencing and analyzing all of those spreadsheets. But this is the whole reason why it's important to have a great, robust public health system.
You mentioned that you were whittling it down. You feel like you've got a couple suspects. Is there anything that you can share on where this could be coming from yet?
You know, we don't have enough information to really share at this point. But what I can tell you is that past outbreaks have been related to produce, and so produce is at the top of our list. It may not be produce that's coming from a grocery store. We're thinking about restaurants and fast food chains as well. And we're really advising people right now that if you're bringing produce into your home, we want to make sure that you're washing it really well, even if it says pre-washed on the bag. We want you to wash your produce really well. But if you're going out to eat, if you're going to restaurants, if you're going to fast food chains, just keep track of what it is you're eating. Because if you do become ill, number one, we want you to contact your healthcare provider so that you can get tested and treated. But number two, we really want to be able to compile that information so that, again, we can hone this down and we can find out exactly what is causing this outbreak.
So it doesn't seem like this is a deadly parasite, but the symptoms that you may have could linger for how long?
You know, they can linger for a while. People can actually have diarrhea that comes and goes even for a couple of weeks. However, you know, it is treatable. It's treated with a very simple, very common antibiotic, typically something like Bactrim. And within taking that Bactrim, symptoms are usually better within just a few days. So it is treatable for people who are healthy and have good immune systems. It can be more problematic for those who have weakened immune systems. So the message is here, if you are someone who thinks you may have been impacted, if you're having these symptoms, please see your healthcare provider, especially if you're someone with a weakened immune system.
How much then information are you sharing with the CDC from the state level? How much information are you getting from them?
Well, you know, I mentioned this whole network of disease detectives. And we've got our local health departments that are doing the boots on the ground investigation. They're the ones doing all the interviews. They're compiling that information, sending it on to the state for a full analysis. And then we're in communication with the CDC. So all of these entities are working together. We've got local health, we've got state health, and the CDC all working in tandem to figure out the source of this outbreak.
Dr. Natasha Bagdasarian, the chief medical executive for the state of Michigan. We appreciate your time. Thanks for getting up early with us this morning, and we'll talk soon.
You too. Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye. Yeah, so unbelievable story there. Thankfully, our health officials are keeping an eye on that situation for us. Meanwhile, I'm keeping an eye on the World Cup for you, because the absolutely stunning news yesterday was that FIFA overturned Flo Balogun's red card. Unprecedented is certainly one way to look at it. But as we got more information yesterday, it became clear that U.S. Soccer was assembling a legal team to try to challenge this before the 8 o'clock kick tonight in Seattle against Belgium. This all stemmed from last game prior when they beat Bosnia and Herzegovina, and Flo Balogun stepped on a player's ankle. It triggered the VAR system, the virtual referee system, And then the red card came out and he was ejected from that game. The U.S. had to play for over 35 minutes without one of their men on the field, Flo Balogun. So they were down to 10 players on the pitch. And then yesterday, the news came out that the red card was overturned. FIFA looked at it and then threw it away. So Flo Balogun at this point is able to play tonight. Although now Belgium, according to reports, has been granted the right to appeal this ruling by FIFA. So we're into the situation of appeals. There were legal teams being put into place. A decision was made. Donald Trump allegedly had talked to the head of FIFA to try to get this resolved. And all of us. And by the way, this was pretty roundly questioned. Like there were many soccer experts that were weighing in that felt like this didn't deserve a red card. Lionel Messi in this tournament had a play very, very similar, and a yellow card wasn't even produced. And so people are looking at this going, well, hold on. If it's okay for Lionel Messi, now, yes, he is the best player in the world, but if it's essentially the same play, why are we getting two different results? And so now Belgium, according to reports, is going to appeal this again. We are, what, just over 13 hours away from kicking this thing off in Seattle. So something that we're going to watch because there are developments even this morning on this case. Meanwhile, at 6:44, time for ION Engineering. It's brought to you by the CSP, the Composite Solution Partner, an industry leader in lightweight and advanced composites. Learn more at thecsp.com.
Toyota's Collaborative Safety Research Center, which partners with outside groups for critical safety research, announced 10 new projects as it approaches its 15th anniversary. The center, run out of Toyota's North American R&D hub in Saline, was started when the company decided that investing in safety research by clinical, lab, and university settings would advance knowledge faster and further than keeping it all in-house. Among the 10 new projects is a University of Virginia-led study asking how to predict lumbar spine injuries in both upright and reclined passenger seating positions. Another, with Grosse Pointe-based touchstone evaluations, will study how a driver's speed affects surrounding traffic behavior. To date, more than 100 CSRC studies have been completed on everything from active safety features to human factors affecting crashes. For SAE International, I'm Chris Klontz, and that's an Eye on Engineering.
So Mallory McMorrow is throwing in the towel. She has suspended her bid for U.S. Senate here in the state of Michigan. That leaves Haley Stevens and Abdul Al-Sayed up for grabs on the Democratic side. So there has been a shakeup. Craig Monger, the state politics reporter with the Detroit News, joins me this morning to talk about it. Craig, this was, I suppose, surprising in the sense that this was a highly contested, highly politicized race, but she did seem to be sagging in some of the important numbers.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right, Chris. Good morning. I mean, I think Mallory had a lot of supporters, but just not enough to anywhere compete with what was happening with the Stevens and El-Sayed campaign this summer. I mean, El-Sayed has gained a lot of momentum in the polling amid this progressive movement that's kind of taking hold in Democratic politics right now. And Stevens has had millions upon millions of dollars of TV advertising come in to benefit her. And that kind of left McMorrow on an island. She didn't have any of the support that she needed to kind of catch up with what those two were doing. The polling showed she had fallen behind. There's a fundraising report deadline coming up in a couple days that she would have to show how much money she raised. I'm guessing that wasn't going to be too pretty. So I think she figured now's the time to get out.
Mm. You know, I don't, I have a hard time seeing what's happening in places like New York or Colorado happening here, where you have a much more progressive socialist candidate like Abdul Al-Sayed, elevating to that level, winning a contested primary, but we have seen it. There is precedent for it. What's happening inside the Democratic Party that you're seeing maybe elsewhere around the country that could be applicable here?
Well, I think it's something that's happening on both sides of the aisle, I think, to some extent, is that there's an intense anger with what's been happening in government. There's a desire to throw the people who are in office out. So I think that is kind of a factor in this. And I mean, to say that this is something that can't happen in Michigan, I don't think is necessarily correct. I mean, all we have to go back is a decade when everyone thought Hillary Clinton was going to win the Democratic primary in Michigan, and Bernie Sanders won this primary by a surprise. And I think that is the path that Abdul's trying to walk here, pull this upset over Stevens. There are different dynamics in this race. I mean, Stevens has a huge advantage in TV advertising. Clinton did not have that in 2016. Bernie's campaign was running a lot of ads here. But I think that, you know, that's something to watch. I mean, that is a map to victory in a Democratic primary. And you throw on top of that the frustration that a lot of Democratic primary voters are having right now with the incumbents, with corporate influence over politics. These are all things that Abdul's been talking a lot about on the campaign trail, and those things play into his hand.
I'm curious to know, though, we've seen how important a strong candidate can be in these races. And when you're going toe-to-toe against somebody in the opposite party, that's where you generally find yourself in tough spots. We saw it even out in West Michigan when Peter Meyer lost his seat, lost to a more hardline conservative backed by Donald Trump, and they ended up losing that seat. Obviously, Mike Rogers is a very formidable candidate, almost won the Senate race just 2 years ago, will be 2 years ago come November. How does that factor in here?
Well, I think Republicans are eager to take on Abdul. I mean, there are a lot of Republicans that seem to be rooting for Abdul in this primary. They think they have a lot of advantages over him if they get to a general election. We'll see if that's right or not. I mean, who knows what's happening in 2026 in this campaign year, but they'd like to see Abdul go on. What you're talking about is something we'll see on stage this week. There is a debate set for, I believe, Tuesday, and it was going to be three people on stage, Mallory, Abdul, and Haley. And now you're going to have just Abdul and Haley, and you're going to have this clash of ideas with two people who are very different and where they want the Democratic Party to go. That is going to be front and center. And I encourage people to watch this debate. I think it's going to be broadcast statewide through Wood TV. It's going to be a fascinating event.
Yeah, I agree. The thing that I've noticed about Abdul Al-Sayed, and obviously Haley Stevens has been in Congress now for years, but the thing about Abdul Al-Sayed is he's polished, right? He knows how to work a room. He knows how to handle these types of situations with the media. He knows how to handle the situation, certainly in a debate format now. You know, he is a much more formidable candidate now than when he was trying to run for governor, back in 2018?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, I also think the Democratic Party has changed in a way that the primary electorate has shifted toward him. A lot of the ideas he was talking about in 2018 seemed, I think, to many Democratic primary voters a little aggressive at the time. The stuff he was talking about, you know, government-provided health insurance, taking on Blue Cross Blue Shield. I mean, those were ideas that were a little bit new at that time. And now there's a lot more support in the primary electorate for those ideas. I mean, he has a simple message that he has been sticking to on the campaign trail. He is very comfortable with himself. He is very comfortable talking to people one-on-one. I think voters like that. I think the issue is really going to be, how does he take this attack, take his campaign to Haley Stevens in a one-on-one fight now, because that's something he has not been in before. And he runs a risk. You know, I've talked to a lot of Democratic consultants in the last 24 hours. He cannot be overly aggressive.
Right.
He cannot look like he's bullying Haley. That's something to watch for at this debate.
Yep. Craig Mauger, always great stuff. Hope you had a nice holiday weekend. We'll talk again soon, my friend. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, you got it. But again, now this turns into a two-horse race. Haley Stevens, Abdul Al-Sayed, Mallory McMorrow suspending her campaign. But it does beg the question of what we're seeing across the country with more socialist candidates winning over incumbents, winning against folks that have been in the halls of Congress for years. And all of a sudden, you're seeing a dynamic shift. Partly, it's because of the party. They don't want what we're seeing on the Democratic side of things, at least, the same old song and dance. They don't want the establishment, the Chuck Schumers of the world. They're moving past that. But at the same time, it's incredibly difficult when you're balancing on the other side of that somebody with much more progressive views. That may be how the party electorate likes it, but is that good enough against somebody on the opposite side. Interesting note. 7 o'clock hour, get you caught up on the headlines. More Nexus, JR Morning. So we had to be out of our house yesterday. We're supposed to be closing on our house today. So we're in the mid, we're in the thick of it. We are in the trenches.
This is a big deal. A lot
getting
of work.
Everything. Oh God, it's a lot of work. I don't know why we ever, whatever. We're absolutely insane people, apparently. But so we're packing things up. Kids are absolutely, they're bored, right? They're losing their minds.
Sure.
And all of a sudden, I get a message on my phone and everything came to a grinding halt.
And what was that?
Phil Balogun is playing tonight for Team USA against Belgium in the round of 16. I said, hold on. Everything must stop. Oh, I have to read this. I have to take it in. This is huge news.
Was your wife thrilled by that?
She was like, why are we stopping? Yeah. But yesterday, the reports was that Phil Balogun, who got that red card against Bosnia and Herzegovina in the round of 32, with about 35 minutes or so left to play in that game, he got booted for stepping on a player's ankle. Inadvertently, it was an accident. It was a play on the ball, but he missed, and the video referee system kicked in, and he was awarded a red card. When you get the red card, not only are you kicked out of the game, but then you are not eligible to play in the next game, which is tonight's game at 8 o'clock against Belgium. Well, then, yesterday in that report was that Flo Balogun was able to play thanks to Article 27 of the Code of Conduct for FIFA. It's a very vague rule. Basically, it gives them the authority to do whatever. But we were questioning, well, why that happened. Well, apparently Donald Trump ended up talking with the head of FIFA and said, hey, can you look at this? Because everybody's telling me that this was not the right decision. It wasn't the right call. Mm-hmm. And he goes, yeah, we'll take a look at it. Well, then the call gets overturned. And the question is, well, is there politics coming into play here? What's going on? Why is this happening?
Valid question.
Things like that. All fair. Now, there have been a couple instances in which FIFA has overturned a ruling. But regardless, it is mostly unprecedented. It's unbelievable to think that in the span of one game getting kicked out after you get the red card to literally basically 24 hours before the next game starts where that player wouldn't be eligible. Now they're eligible again. And it throws everything into a tizzy. Obviously, Belgium is very upset about this. And they are going to appeal this. And FIFA has granted their ability to appeal this. And so they will. But it absolutely stunning turn of events for the United States. Phil Balogun, arguably their best player. And now he is, at least as of right now, 7:08, he is going to be available.
Right,
tonight.
Because don't they have to make a decision within, like, the next hour or two?
Yeah, pretty soon.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're going to have to make that decision pretty soon. Meanwhile, I couldn't really possibly care less, but I think I am in the minority. Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce got married over the weekend.
Yeah, it's official. Madison Square Garden. 1,000 people were there.
1,000?
1,000 people were there. Great. Adam Sandler officiated the ceremony.
Okay, that was...
That is the smallest Madison Square Garden crowd I've ever heard of.
Yeah, that's what the Knicks used to play in front of before they got good. I when I was reading like the immediate reports after the wedding, they go, oh, and their actor, friend, and comedian Adam Sandler officiated.
What?
That's so random. Yeah, I didn't see that one coming.
Was this thing even legal?
I'm not sure. I'm not. Was he like
the online course?
Was he like doo-doo-doo, you're married now? You doo-doo-doo.
Oh,
was he doing that?
Not. I really hope not.
Well, everybody says it was very nice.
Yeah, he told them to quote keep kissing. I mean, there's small details trickling out. Like there was no wedding party. Taylor's brother Austin was her man of honor. Travis's brother Jason Kelce was the best man. Kylie and Jason's kids were the flower girls. They wrote their own vows. Apparently, they were about 20 minutes apiece.
I think this was Taylor Swift's vows. Oh, wait, I better turn that up. Hold on.
Here it is.
They blow a whistle, and then they go at each other, and they're like,
Yeah.
That was her definition of football. She was on Jason Kelce's podcast a few years ago.
Oh, my gosh. Ceremony was on an upper level. Reception was the main floor. A witness described the decor as Alice in Wonderland meets the Wizard of Oz.
Now, did they mention why they did Madison Square Garden?
To be a huge pain on one of the biggest weekends in one of our biggest cities. No, I don't know if they said that. They probably didn't.
They should have done something tropical.
She could have had like a chateau in France, like anywhere in the world.
Underneath the Eiffel Tower.
Right. You chose the most congested area on the America's biggest weekend.
Taylor Swift is so famous that the Pope would have officiated their wedding.
Yeah.
You're not wrong.
She could have gotten married at Westminster and King Charles could have handled the nuptials.
Stevie Nicks and Paul McCartney performed.
Oh, I tried to get them at my wedding 10 years ago, but I never heard back.
Ah, it's weird. I don't know why.
Look, God bless them. I said to my wife, because she was all into this, I was like, well, the good news for somebody like me is that it's over now. Now we don't have to hear about it.
You think it's over?
Yeah, it's not over.
This is just the beginning, my friend.
Yeah, we're going to hear more details coming out. They're going to be like, yeah, you remember the wedding a few weeks ago? Well, this is blah, blah, blah.
Well, everything apparently was on video. Like, they were filming the whole thing. So it's going to come out at some point.
It's going to be some kind of documentary.
But then my wife said, wait until they have a kid.
Right.
Oh, no.
Well, I was clinically depressed after that. I was like, oh, my God.
Well, what do you think? What do you think? How long do you think this marriage is going to last? Over under 2 years?
I just want to see the prenup.
I don't care. I don't care. I don't care about the prenup. I don't care about the... I don't care.
Well, this kind of has
they
to
blow
wrap
a whistle
up.
And then they go at each other and they're like... Arr!
For football reasons, like... Travis has got to get his head in the game. Like all this,
he hasn't had his head in the game for years.
No, he's been contemplating retirement the last few years. So I think he can
stay at home dad.
Pretty much do it now.
Stay at home dad. Exactly. How about this? Josh and Jace are coming back.
We have a huge announcement. This is the moment you've all been waiting for. Michigan, we are coming back, and we're going to tell you the dates.
Nervous, man.
What are the dates that Josh and Jace will be in Michigan this summer?
We are coming back to Michigan this summer on the 24th of July until the 17th of August.
Ooh!
That's a long time.
And when I tell you we've got some stuff in the locker, I'm not joking. Strap in.
We've earned our stripes. We did Michigan in the winter. Now it's time to see what Michigan is like in the summer. I'm excited, mate.
I think it's going to be the biggest trip ever. Our biggest trip ever.
Hey, listen. Time to see that Midwest nice again, all right?
Michigan, we'll see you under the bridge, over the bridge. Either way, we'll see you soon.
All right, what are they doing this summer?
Oh, man. I feel like they're going up north for sure.
Jamie introduced us to these guys. Yeah. They are hilarious.
Yeah, they're great.
Yeah.
Man.
I'm really glad they are coming back to experience summer because, as we know, winter and summer are day and night for Michigan.
Well, I was watching them a little bit, too, and I know we're running late here. I was watching them as reacting to all the other World Cup fans that are here experiencing the United States and having a great time. He's like, yeah, it's awesome here. Mm-hmm. So like, I was wondering what they were going to do if they were going to go elsewhere, go down to Texas, get brisket, whatever. Right. All that stuff.
Yeah.
But they're coming back to Michigan.
Of course they are.
They're some of our best ambassadors, aren't they?
This is like its own pure Michigan campaign.
And if anybody ever wants to see their video of them on the Mackinac Bridge where they could see through.
Yes. It is absolutely hilarious. Fantastic. 7:12, time for WJR's Business Beat, brought to you by shelving.com. We rack your world. Here's Jeff Sloan, the founder and CEO of Startup Nation, to spotlight the entrepreneurial tech and startup community on WJR.
Good morning. So many options available to us when it comes to engaging new and existing customers as a small business, but here's a good old standby that just flat out works. For years, newsletter advertising sat on the edges of most media plans. It was seen as niche and hard to scale. But all of that is changing according to the latest newsletter ad performance report compiled after review of millions of dollars in spend and insights for more than 1,500 advertisers. And the data shows it's clear that newsletter advertising has crossed an important threshold. It's no longer a test channel. It's now an operating channel, and marketers are beginning to treat it just that way. What stands out most is that in a market where volatility has become the norm, newsletters are doing something increasingly rare. That is, they are delivering predictable results. The data shows a 30% year-over-year increase in newsletter revenue and a 40% increase in total newsletter ad campaigns, alongside an 80% expansion in reachable subscriber pools, and rebooking intent grew more than 60% year-over-year. And that's a leading indicator of trust. Marketers don't rebook unless it's working. So why is newsletter advertising working so well? Well, audiences are tired of interruptions, platforms are less transparent, targeting is more constrained, and performance marketers are under pressure to show real outcomes instead of modeled assumptions. And newsletters. It's newsletters that offer a rare combination. Direct access to an opted-in, engaged, and interested audience delivered in a predictable format with minimal signal loss. There's no feed or algorithm to fight, no scrolling competition, no ambiguity about whether the message was actually seen, and that simplicity turns out to be a major competitive advantage. So look, if you're looking for a channel that delivers with a high degree of confidence, consider newsletter advertising. Or even perhaps establishing a newsletter of your own you issue directly from your business to your customer base. Data now shows it's working. I'm Jeff Sloan, founder and CEO of StartupNation.com, the source for everything you need to start and grow your own business. And that's today's Business Beat on the great voice of the Great Lakes, WJR.
You know, Nolan Finley wrote an interesting piece in the Detroit News over the weekend. It was actually posted on July 4th. But this idea that the Supreme Court is in Donald Trump's pocket, and his contention was there isn't anything rogue about the Supreme Court justices. There isn't anything rogue about their rulings. And as a matter of fact, if you are of that belief, if you are of the notion, because you turn on CNN or Fox News or MS Now or whatever, if you listen to these folks, then they'll have you believe that the Supreme Court is captured, that they're politically motivated, that they're doing the bidding of the conservative puppeteers or the majority or the president. But if you actually look at what the Supreme Court's recent decisions have been, it's harder to sell that narrative, yet that is one of the major talking points amongst some of the decisions that have been made. And you don't really have to look any further than some of the split decisions right before they went on break. You know, upholding the ban on transgender athletes competing in men's sports, or girls' sports, rather. So these cases out of Idaho and West Virginia that put these bans in place, they said that they were allowed to do so. So transgender girls cannot compete in women's sports. Okay, well then, in the very next breath, they uphold birthright citizenship. So you see what John Roberts and Amy Coney Barrett have done. How about another case? How about the Lisa Cook Federal Reserve case? Trump tried to remove her. Again, these justices broke with the administration. There was an effort to recall, address the mail-in ballots. Well, that didn't go the president's way. The E. Jean Carroll defamation judgment didn't go his way. But what we're seeing, particularly out of Democrats, in a time when, again, it's unpopular to be really both parties, but for sure Democrats, they haven't quite figured out 2024 yet. And we're at a place now where it's completely unbelievable to me. I don't know how we've gotten to this point. But people will try to sell you on the fact that, well, it's the Supreme Court. They're just doing the bidding of Donald Trump. And this goes back to his first term. It goes back to the first term of, you know, remember the whole narrative that Bill Barr was his personal attorney and not the Attorney General of the United States. But when Donald Trump came out with his 2020 accusations, Bill Barr completely dismissed them. So there is this element of trying to demonize people because of some sort of affiliation with Donald Trump, whether that's just a nomination or whether that's an appointment to attorney general, that all of these people are just in Donald Trump's pockets. And I just don't think that that's fair. It's not a fair argument. And I think most of you probably see that too. And if you are one of those people making that argument, I don't know where it comes from, because you can't have your cake and eat it too. Either sometimes these Supreme Court rulings go the way you think they should, or they don't. And that's just something you have to live with. That's life. That's every day. So it's odd to me that that continues to be a major talking point. Because I don't think it's healthy. I don't think it's healthy for our country that the Supreme Court would be in lockstep every time, that they have to vote in unanimous fashions to prove some sort of point. It's one of the reasons why the Supreme Court is so genius. And again, it's a lot of reflection on this July 4th weekend as we start the next 250 years of our country. It's like the reason they are here is because the foundation that was laid gave us the ability to roll with the punches. We're able to adapt to time. Because even the framers knew that back in the late 1700s was not going to be the same as it was in the late 1800s. It's hard to know how far into the future they were thinking. But they knew that their way of life, their way of thinking, was not going to be the way of thinking forever. That things were going to change, and so they created something to do just that. And so having court justices be able to interpret law, be able to look at something from their perspective and come up with a decision that they feel best represents what the rule of law says, that's exactly what we want. It's exactly what we want. Donald Trump, by happenstance, was able to appoint more justices than Joe Biden did. That's happenstance. It's going to happen again. It may happen to a Democrat in the future. But as of right now, these are the cards that we've been dealt. And to sell a country on the fact that this Supreme Court is just in Donald Trump's pockets, I it's one that I don't quite understand. But it's a fascinating look into, again, the narratives that are trying to be created in order to sway you a certain way. But I know that you're above that fray. And I know you see this too. But it's fascinating to me that it hasn't stopped. It's actually only picking up. And we've seen it with the Supreme Court justices. We've seen it in Congress. And we've seen it really in every nook and cranny of the federal government. Coming up on the other side, we'll get you caught up on some of the headlines. Also, I do want to talk a little bit about the Tigers. We'll do that this hour as well. Three All-Stars named. They've won 5 of 6. They're hot. It's coming up on JR Morning.
At 250 years old, we may be the oldest constitutional republic on earth, but our country is just getting started because the best is yet to come. America!
Yeah! And that was, the first part was Donald Trump. On July 4th, the 250th celebration in Washington, D.C., things got postponed quite a bit because of weather and lightning, and Donald Trump did end up speaking just after 11 o'clock, and he said that, if there was one person left in D.C., he was going to talk to them because he felt it was important to give his address on July 4th. And I actually agreed. And yes, it was a late night. Yes, everything was postponed, the fireworks display, which was unbelievable. But I thought it was right. And I thought for the most part, he struck the right tone. Yeah, there were a couple of parts that I would have liked omitted. But that's Donald Trump, and you move on. But I thought the focus on the flag, the focus on our founders was particularly impactful.
We have thrived and flourished because our founders were great. Our cause was just. Our people are brave. Our culture is exceptional. And our destiny is written by God.
And what can we achieve?
In this country, we can achieve the wildest and most impossible dreams. And no dream in history is bigger or more incredible than the one that started on July 4th, 1776.
And he brought out different military members, veterans that have served in allowing the United States to evolve the way that it has and provide us the rights that we have and preserve those rights that we have. And those were particularly impactful. I mean, many of those veterans and that he had brought on stage were over 100 years old. And the focus on the American flag and the evolution of that symbol of our democracy, of our republic, of our freedom, I thought was special. And the celebration was certainly full on in Washington. And the celebration here will continue throughout much of the month as we continue to focus on not only where we are as a country, where we came from, but then Michigan's role in all of it and how we continue to strive for a more perfect union. I thought it was a wonderful 4th of July holiday. Meanwhile, the U.S. soccer team gets ready for their round of 16 match against Belgium tonight. And Flo Balogun was not expected to play in this game. Why? Because he got a red card against Bosnia-Herzegovina. And in soccer, when you get a red card in a game, not only do you have to leave, which he did, they played with 10 men on the pitch for over 35 minutes, but you are now ineligible to play in the next game, which is the game against Belgium. Well, yesterday, reports came out that FIFA had invoked Article 27 of its disciplinary code. Suspending that suspension itself, Balogun is eligible to play. So he will play tonight. It's a huge boost for the United States. Scored in every game so far this tournament. He's got 3 goals. He's their leading scorer. And a report said that Donald Trump had personally contacted President Gianni Infantino, the head of FIFA, and urged him to review the case. He said that it was one that everybody he was talking to said it wasn't the right call. And so the decision was made by FIFA. And Belgium's response said that this was astonishing, that they are questioning the integrity of FIFA's disciplinary process, which I can understand. And then you've got, is politics coming into play here? Is something else afoot? Which are also fair questions to ask. But FIFA has taken these steps in the past, particularly during the last World Cup. Cristiano Ronaldo, ahead of the tournament starting, had elbowed a player. He was suspended for 3 games. The last 2 were when the World Cup started. They were in the group stages. Well, instead of upholding that red card for the elbow, FIFA decided to put Cristiano Ronaldo, who is the second best player in the world, on a 1-year probationary period. So there is instances of it happening, but when you're talking about in the tournament, deep in the tournament, in the round of 16, in between a couple of games, that is more unprecedented. But that's what FIFA said. Now, Belgium has been granted the right to appeal that. They will. So as we stand here today, Flo Balogun at 8:11 is going to play tonight in less than 12 hours. But that appeal pending, so it's something that we're going to continue to watch. Meanwhile, the Tigers wrapped up a successful road trip yesterday, 6-3 win over the Rangers in Arlington, taking the rubber game in that series, 5-1. Riley Green shining the brightest. Had a 2-run homer in the 4th inning, had a 2-run triple in the 5th inning. He had 4 of Detroit's 6 RBI in that game. Casey Mize was really good in that game as well, 6 2/3 innings. He got the win as well. And look, Texas made a couple of mistakes, but the Tigers capitalized on it. And that's what good teams do. If you can capitalize on those mistakes, you're doing things right.
And the bullpen shut the door.
Yes, they did.
Which is nice.
Yes, they did. And also, all-star players have been announced. The Tigers have 3 representatives in Philadelphia this year: Riley Green, Dylan Dingler, and Kevin McGonigal. I am not surprised about Dylan Dingler. No. If there was going to be one representative, it was going to be him. I thought Riley Green was on the bubble, but he is in. And as a rookie, Kevin McGonigal gets in. I love everything about this game.
I do, and how ironic for a team that's pitching is much stronger than their offense, yet they send 3 hitters to the All-Star game.
Isn't that fascinating?
Yeah.
Well, it feels like the pitching has come on a little late.
It has, yes.
Right? Like, they haven't had the full body of work this year.
True, yeah. Skubal, he's missed some time. Otherwise, he'd be there, sure.
Yeah. But
Casey Mize deserves to be there.
He does deserve to be there. Is there some additions after the fact?
Yeah,
like, fan voting,
if certain guys like pull out, then the next in line, basically. The fan voting, I believe, I'm not sure, I'd have to look
yeah
that
I'd
up.
Have to look it up. Yeah. I think it's still ongoing though.
Yeah,
I don't think that's concluded yet. Meanwhile, Mallory McMorrow, the state senator here in the state of Michigan, has suspended her campaign for that open U.S. Senate seat. Now it's a two-man race, two-horse race here. Haley Stevens and Abdul El-Sayed. You've got certainly the more party-friendly Haley Stevens and the more progressive on the fringe Abdul El-Sayed. They've got a big debate tomorrow. It was supposed to be a three-person debate, now down to two. Mallory McMorrow out in that race. Her name will be on that ballot, though, by the way, because many of those ballots have already been printed. And so she will, Mallory McMorrow, suspending her race here, or her campaign in this race as well. Fascinating stuff. Obviously, things have not fallen her way. And more of the money going towards now, again, Abdul El-Sayed and Mallory McMorrow. Or, excuse me, Haley Stevens, so Mallory McMorrow throwing in the towel on this race. Thankfully, I think we're out of the heat wave, which is a nice little respite here. But we like to be outside, especially during this time of year. We spend so much time cooped up in the winter. But these high temperatures should not deter you from making sure your house is comfortable, which means it shouldn't break your budget. So you need to count on Consumers Energy to help make the most of this season with ways to help you save. Like making small changes, shifting some energy use to the morning or the evening, or raising your thermostat a couple of degrees, doing laundry at night or on the weekends. All of these things actually can help keep your bills lower while getting done everything you need to do and keeping your house comfortable. So discover more ways to beat the heat at consumersenergy.com/summer. All right, so on the world stage, Iran held the funeral for the former supreme leader killed in those initial strikes on the onset of this war with Iran. And much has transpired since then, obviously. But what is the status of the Strait of Hormuz? Because we actually have seen gas prices come down here in the state of Michigan. The average cost of a gallon of gas is under $4 a gallon now, which is certainly welcome news. It's certainly good news for Republicans as they are trying to distance themselves from some of these high prices. But that doesn't mean things are operating as exactly as they'd like. Let's talk about it. Eben Brown, our Fox News reporter and WJR contributor, joins us to talk about it this morning. Eben, it's good to have you back. It sounds like there is some traffic being allowed to go through the Strait at this point. Where do we stand today?
Well, I think we're still sort of where we were before the weekend. There are ships that are transiting out of the Strait of Hormuz, and that's a good thing. The price of oil, at least what we watch here in the United States, West Texas Intermediate, that is still below $70 a barrel. That's good. It's right now, as I look at it here, it's $68.67. It flows up a couple cents, down a couple cents as the day goes on. These are speculative prices, of course. They will eventually translate to prices at the pump. It just takes some time. We are still in this very weird 60-day period where both sides are talking indirectly and they are talking about how to talk once they actually start talking. That's kind of really what this is.
We're talking about talk is what we're doing here. Yeah.
We're talking about how to talk.
Yeah.
As this show funeral for the now dead Ali Khamenei goes on these next few days, there's no talking, but the talks will resume, I believe, in Pakistan. And that means having both the U.S. and Iran in two separate venues and having the Pakistanis kind of shuttling between the two, trying to work out agreements about how to proceed to talk once they actually start talking at the end of this 60-day period, which, knowing President Trump, might get pushed if they haven't reached an agreement, but he thinks that there's progress. That's kind of usually how he works. So, again, everything is still kind of up in the air. In the meantime, there is a steady but not 100% movement of ships out of the Strait of Hormuz, but it is lowering the price of fuel at the retail level. Eventually. And I think that that's a well-calculated move by the administration. They know very well that high gas prices are always blamed on the president and the president's party, no matter what the actual cause may really be. When voters have to pay more for gas, they get very angry.
Yeah, certainly. Meanwhile, yesterday on Fox News, on Sunday Morning Features, retired General Jack Keane, a friend of the show, also said that the United States has, quote, got to stop Iran from maintaining control of the Strait of Hormuz. How difficult is that positioning for the United States at this point during this ceasefire period?
Well, it's difficult overall because if the Iranian forces and again, things are kind of fractured in Iran. So the IRGC may not be following any directives from the political echelon to stop, but they are the ones that are firing on ships at random or ships that tried to sail closer to the Omani side of the strait. So if you want to stop them, you have to police them. And that takes, you know, how do you defeat someone with a gun? You need a bigger gun. And we have the bigger guns, of course, but does this administration want to have a long-term security commitment in the Persian Gulf? That, again, comes with political problems and of course, requires congressional funding for the long term and all of that stuff. The end result is do you dispel this regime entirely or do you convince them through the carrot and stick approach to behave better? I think 47 years of their defiance proves that they probably can't be contained very well. But President Trump insists that they're talking with newer, better, more flexible people. I don't know if that's really true, but that's what the president is saying.
Well, and that's the trouble here. And the president has put his mediators in place, Jared Kushner, Steve Witkoff, certainly J.D. Vance has been involved in this as well. You said at this point they're talking about how to talk. But is that proving fruitful at this point? Because when the memorandum of understanding came out, the second memorandum of understanding came out, it drew some confused reactions. People weren't quite sure what to make of it. It wasn't exactly what we thought it was going to say. But is this truly a framework for something that the United States is going to be able to stomach at some point?
Well, that's the $64,000 question. The United States needs to figure out what it wants to see and what it's willing to do to enforce that. The president, I think, is in a little bit of a political hotspot because he made a promise of no more forever wars that were fruitless and had no real goal. And I think a lot of his support, well, a certain sect of his supporters that have been galvanized by certain far-right podcasters, we'll just say, have somehow co-opted that message into saying no more wars, period. Well, you can't be the world superpower and not expect any wars. You're going to be needed to crack skulls every once in a while when people upset the order. Otherwise, it's bad for everyone. And so the United States needs to have a definitive goal as to what it wants to do, but it has to have the stomach to see it out.
Interesting stuff, as always, Eben Brown. We appreciate you keeping an eye on it for us. Thank you so much. We'll talk soon.
You bet.
Yeah. But again, this is the precarious spot that the United States is in. Precarious might be the wrong word. It does seem very obvious to me that they absolutely want some sort of peace deal in place. And to Eben's point, the president had made a very strong stance on wars that are prolonged. These wars that are seemingly aimless and rudderless, and there's no real off-ramp. And then you find yourself 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years down the road, and you're still involved in some conflict, when in reality, the question that people are asking is, did this even have to happen in the first place? How close, truly, was Iran to developing a nuclear weapon? And so those questions are going to persist. But if you are able to find a diplomatic off-ramp, well, that's completely different. All of a sudden, that narrative changes completely. But with the IRGC doing what they do, this is something that we talked about months ago, this mosaic approach that Iran has, where, yes, there is a supreme leader, yes, there is a president, but Iran is set up in a way in which all of their factions can operate independently. So the IRGC is essentially operating independently, that they're not necessarily taking orders from the Ayatollah. They're not necessarily taking orders from the president. Under normal circumstances, where things are status quo in Iran, that might be the case. But in a situation where there is topsy-turvy, or there is some sort of unbalanced nature of something happening in Iran, like we've seen with the United States and Israel going in militarily, well, all of a sudden they're able to act autonomously now. And we've seen that. And again, I think based on some of the the commentary out of Iran from the leadership is they also want some sort of resolution here. Now, whether that resolution coincides with the United States seems unlikely, but that's something that will remain to be seen. That there are still problems for the United States, particularly with the Strait, as the memorandum of understanding was adopted and this 60-day ceasefire period takes effect. Meanwhile, we have a member of the Gulf elite here in the state of Michigan today. We'll talk to him. He's on the west side. It's next on JR Morning. All right, continuing to watch the situation with U.S. soccer. Flo Balogun, his red card was overturned. Those reports dropped yesterday at around lunchtime, and he is set to go today. He got that red card against Bosnia and Herzegovina, and that was overturned. So he will play against Belgium. At least this, we stand here at 8:37 here on a Monday morning. Now, Belgium, who they're playing tonight, has been granted the right to appeal this decision by FIFA. And again, Flo Balogun has been the best player for the United States in this tournament. So his loss was a big one, not only in the last game when he was had to go, U.S. playing with 10 players. That could have been impactful. They ended up winning that game 2-0. But his absence in this game, as you get further in this tournament, things get exponentially harder, and you go without your best player, that's problematic. But regardless, that decision was overturned by FIFA using Article 27 of their Code of Conduct, which basically gives them the right to do whatever they want. It's not something they do very often, though. So the fact that they did do it was extraordinary in and of itself. But then you start to get the details of it, and Donald Trump did end up reaching out to the head of FIFA, saying, like, everything I'm hearing says that this is not right. Can you look at this? And it sounded like U.S. Soccer was preparing, you know, a legal team to push back against this. The White House was joining in on that as well. And then the president eventually made the call and the decision was made. Now, the questions are, is this politically motivated? Are there favors being, you know, swapped back and forth here? All legitimate questions. All legitimate questions. But, you know, I would almost love to find a commentator who agreed with this, because pretty resoundingly, nobody did. I mean, even in this tournament alone, Lionel Messi did the same thing, stepped on a player's ankle while trying to make a play on the ball and wasn't even shown a yellow. So again, it's Messi, Flo Balogun, not the same player, worlds apart, but still there is some inconsistencies in that call. And that doesn't just, it doesn't just apply to soccer. You see that all over the place. In every sport, inconsistencies and different officiating crews, things like that. So as we stand here now, Flo Balogun's a go. But Belgium is going to appeal this, and they've been given that right to appeal. So we're going to continue to watch it, because it seems like this is developing as the morning progresses. Meanwhile, we talk a lot about all the wonderful golf destinations here in the state of Michigan, and that is certainly fact. We have so many great courses here in the state. And one of them that probably doesn't get talked about enough is Harbor Shores. That in Benton Harbor. And that is a Jack Nicklaus signature course. Fantastic, fantastic track. Beautiful. And now there's a new feature there. And that is the Wii course. The Wii course. It is designed by Hall of Fame golfer and 2014 KitchenAid Senior PGA Championship winner Colin Montgomery. And of course, Colin Montgomery, look, there are very few names in any sport that has the kind of juice that Colin Montgomery does. He was one of the best European players in the 90s and in the 2000s. He had 8 European Tour Emeritus title winners. He was a 31 European Tour winner. And he never won a major, but he was always in contention. Always in contention. He spent how crazy is this? 400 weeks ranked among the top 10 players in the world. That's how good Colin Montgomery was. And he was as good as he was on the tour. Unbelievable Ryder Cup player. Never lost a singles match. One of the most successful competitors in European history. Had the unbelievable showing in 2010 in Wales. And he is certainly an influential voice in golf through broadcasting. His play on the PGA Tour Champion Circuit, and now course design, because he has designed the Wii course at Harbor Shores. It's 5 acres, 9-hole pitch and putt course. There are lights there so you can play at night. It's designed to play in under an hour. It's $30 for 9 holes, $40 for 18, $50 for all-day access. And here is really an awesome part in all of this, is like you can change the yardages. So it's only 9 holes. But you if you play 18, you go back and circle around, you can get a completely different perspective on a hole that you already played. It is absolutely fantastic, and I cannot wait to play there. So next time I'm on the west side of the state, I'm going to have to get there because it is absolutely fantastic. The Highland Greens, there's a putting course there, 15,000 square foot. There's lighting, music, food at Monty's Place in homage to Colin Montgomery, and it's a different vibe for golf. But we've seen more of these courses pop up across the country, these shorter courses where basically you're just playing with a wedge and a putter, a couple wedges and a putter, and that's it. And they've become incredibly popular for people who don't necessarily golf, but you want to dip your toes into the water. It's a great way to do it, because it takes skill, but you're not staring down the barrel of a 520-yard par 5, and, you know, how do you get there in 5 strokes? No, this is much more relaxed. It's much more enjoyable if you're a weekend golfer. And it is now another destination here in the state of Michigan for fantastic golf. So Colin Montgomery adding his stamp to what is already a fantastic resort at Harbor Shores alongside Jack Nicklaus. Absolutely fantastic for and great news for the state of Michigan, certainly. Coming up on the other side, Jamie rejoins the show. We're talking about the latest episode of her podcast. Lloyd and I are on it. It's next on JR Morning. All right, always good to be joined by Jamie Edmonds, who is nearing the end of the treatment. Hi, Jamie. Good morning.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
I'm good. How are you is the question.
I am just so hopeful that the end of this treatment is coming. It's on July 14th, but who's counting?
Who's counting? Not you. Not us.
Now, yeah, I know.
Let me ask you this. So you get, once you get the last Red Devil treatment, what's the process for you, like, in the immediate aftermath?
Well, I'm very excited about this because I get to ring the bell. And what happens is I still have my regular treatment, however many hours it's going to take. And then I get to invite some family and friends to sort of line the hallway there. And then I'm going to come out and ring the bell that I've done it. It's the end of treatment, and I get to celebrate a little bit. And as I've said to you guys, like, it's a long road, surgery's upcoming. I don't know what they're going to find when they're in there. But it is a big win and a big celebration for me personally to be able to ring that bell.
That's going to be a wonderful sound to hear that bell ring.
You know, what's interesting is it gets rung a lot while you're there getting treatment. And I'm just so excited for the people who are doing it. And I'm sure people are going to hear me doing it. It's just a nice community inside that Henry Ford Cancer Pavilion. I cannot wait.
You've made some really wonderful decisions on who to talk to about this process and this journey that you're on. You made a bad one for your latest episode, but that's
that's dependent on who you talk to.
Yeah. No, tell us a little bit about the latest episode here.
The latest episode of the podcast is with my coworkers, with you and Lloyd. I just thought it would be nice to check in with you guys. I kind of sort of checked out when all of this happened. I had to take a step back. So I wanted to check in with you guys. How are things? And sort of, you know, rekindle the connection we had, because we lost it a little bit. I'm not saying it's gone, but we haven't been together as much.
Right. And it was a fantastic conversation. I absolutely loved it because, yeah, just it felt normal again. It felt good to, you know, get everybody in the same room again and talking to microphones.
Yeah, it did. I had no plan. It's not like I gave you guys questions. We just sort of sat down and said, you know, how are you doing? And then it sort of flowed from there. And I thought it was a nice, fun, light conversation. I thought it was perfect for a holiday week if, say, people were driving up north and then driving back. And I thought it was great.
Jason, we got a piece of that?
For this pod, I thought I'd bring in the coworkers. Maybe call it coworker connection, because we did have a very nice connection before all of this started, and then I just abandoned you guys.
You just left. What happened?
We're all still connected. We're all still connected. Yeah.
Lloyd Jackson, Chris Renwick, we are JR Morning here in Detroit. Thanks for joining me on my little project here.
Well, it's a pleasure. I'm so happy that you asked us to do it.
Yeah, no, it's been great following along. Like, you know, we talk and we, you know, you kind of tell us kind of what's going on, but to follow along like everybody else has been very cool.
Well, thank you for following along. Thanks for listening. I appreciate it. I've said this many times. It's cathartic for me to talk about everything that's going on because it's the biggest thing in my life right now. But also I'm getting beautiful messages from people. So hopefully people are listening and they're getting something out of it as well.
I told you about the guy I met
in Columbus
at Coon's Candy who said, I listen to you guys every day. How's Jamie? That's the first thing he said. Like, damn, who you are. How's Jamie?
Right. Well, right. But like,
I'm very big in the tri-state area.
Yes.
Has this reached Pittsburgh yet?
Of course.
Yeah.
I mean, hello.
Well, I mean, obviously, like, your friends and stuff, but, like,
I know for a
Pittsburgh,
fact.
Pittsburgh superstar native Jamie Edmonds.
Yes.
I assume Sidney Crosby's listening.
Right.
I mean,
sure.
I assume.
Yes.
In case people don't know JR Morning, don't know our show, don't know you guys, I thought we'd do a little bio. I mean, Chris, do you want to start? I mean, when did you join and your background?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I joined the show. It's been just over a year now, which is insane to think about.
Wow.
But I mean, I've been at JR for 10 years. It's the longest I've have been at a place, and it's just a lot of really great people here. And I started in our news department and with Frank Beckman for years. I hosted JR Afternoon for a couple of years before I came over with you guys. And it's just been a lot of fun. I mean, you know, obviously I've known Lloyd for a long time. I hadn't really gotten to know you very well. And so.
Well, I'd only been here 3 years-ish.
Right.
Yeah.
And our paths never really crossed. Like,
two ships.
On the, yeah. So I was excited to come and work with you guys. And yeah, I mean, you said, I will correct you with one thing. You said we had a great thing. We still have a great thing.
Of course.
It's still very good.
It's not past tense.
No.
It's not past tense.
You just kind of act up when you're not around.
Yeah, yeah. That is true.
You kind of keep us.
There are more hijinks that happen when you're not here to keep us in line. Yeah, so it was a lot of fun. And then obviously this came up. And so it was a whole new dynamic.
Yeah, it certainly was.
That we were working through.
Lloyd, your background.
22 years at JR before. This is my second stint at WJR. So I did 22 years at WJR in the news department. Of course, left and went and worked for the Wayne County Executive for a couple of years, went to another radio station for a few years, and then came back here to WJR, which this is my family, you know. And I came back as a senior news reporter, and then was asked to do the morning show, which was about 3 years ago, 3-4 years ago. And then you know, I met you when I knew who you were from television and watching those late night sports.
I do extremes only. Yeah. Either Sports Final Edition at 1 a.m. Yeah. Or the morning show here at WJR at 6 a.m.
Yeah. But it's just like, you know, when we all met, it just gelled, you know, it just kind of hit. You know, and it's just been great all the time. When you came out with your diagnosis and everything, I told you, and I still feel the same way. I told you, I said, you are going to be fine. The Lord has already told me you're good. And so many things have happened to me that lets me know that you're going to be okay, because you're the one who found the situation. You had the itch,
sure,
and you found those lumps.
The lump,
and,
yeah.
Yes. And then once you found it, you got the treatment. And I just knew, I said, well, it was the Lord who showed you where that
gave
was.
Gave me the itch.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So to let you know, and he was not going to leave you after he showed you what was going on. So he's with you, and look at you now. You look great.
Thank you.
Pretty fun conversation, don't you think, Chris?
Yeah, it was great. I really enjoy it. I hope people like it, because You know, we don't get to pull back the curtain like that very often. You know, we talk about our lives and do those things on the air, but, you know, in this business, in these types of formats and all over the country, like, you have multiple people shows, and there's a lot of instances where they don't even like each other. Like, that's not the dynamic on our show. We really care for each other, and that helps things.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's wherever you get podcasts, or you can go to the WJR YouTube page. You can watch us interact, which is pretty fun. And I know we're at the end of the time here, Chris. Are you watching Monday Night Football tonight?
No.
You're not?
No. I'm watching Monday Night Soccer tonight. Okay. That's what I'm watching tonight.
All right, dad joke, sorry.
We're going to get drunk before the game. We're going to get drunk during the game, and then we get drunk after the game.
Yes.
That's the plan.
That's the plan. Hit it hard. Flo Balogun's back, baby. We're here.
Go USA.
Go USA. Love you, Jamie. We'll talk next week.
Love you too. See ya.
See ya. That's Jamie Edmonds here on JR Morning, and that's going to do it for us today. Go USA. Thank you, Donald Trump, for Flo Balogun. We appreciate it. Kevin Eats and I'll talk live from the Cherry Festival coming up. It's JR Morning.